Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and welcome to Faith on the Road to Success. I am your host, John C. Abercrombie. Many times when we're traveling on the road to success or the road to anywhere, we feel that we are in control, complete control. It's like when we drive a car. We feel that we are in control of that car. And to the most part, we are. But we have to realize that driving on a road is more than one person being in control of one car. And I say this because there are many people who are in full and complete control of their car until somebody crosses the center line, until something goes wrong. And then we find ourselves in one of those, oh, heck, what the heck is going on situations. What do we do in a time like this? I found a very important lesson one Christmas season. I think it was 1968 or thereabouts. I'm riding with a friend, and we end up in a ditch. Yeah, it had been snowing. Yeah, we had been drinking. But we had hit a patch of ice. Car goes out of control. And I found that even when you think you are in control, it's only because God allows you to sit there. We fool ourselves many times because as that car was spinning around, I ended up out of my seat. My friend was in my seat. I knew him, but I didn't know him like that. And it's only because I didn't use everything available to me. And we find ourselves like this sometimes. Failure to use a seatbelt. And I see this time and time again. When people lose control of a car and they go off the road, they overcorrect, they end up on this side or that side or what have you. Many of those people would still be alive had they been allowed to remain in the seat of the car that they were so confident that they held and controlled. Sometimes simple fixes can resolve many different problems. Many different problems. As a person that sometimes flies from here to there, I found that turbulence is something that scares the bejesus out of me. Plane bounces. I can theoretically go through and understand the reason why that plane bounced. Because the air has currents, and there are other things that allow it to drop. When I watch a vulture or some other bird circling high in the air and looks like going almost forever with the wings outstretched, not flapping them, the wings outstretched, I can understand what's taking place. They're warm patches of air that are lifting up, and these animals are able to take advantage of it. Man often does the same thing. We have people that go up in gliders, and a glider is basically an airplane without an engine. It's towed up to altitude, and by reading the land, by seeing those areas that could be warmer and cooler, you can maintain altitude. You can maintain control of the plane. I like these types of things because it shows you what is possible. When I hunt, I had gotten to the point where I liked archery as a means of taking an animal. Why archery? because it's so easy to do it with a gun. We can be way away and do it. But I understand some principles that are at play here. I can't shoot an arrow near the distance that I can a bullet. And what happens is I have to have sharp skills. I have to be able to get close. I have to be able to use nature in order to approach the animal. I could be at a certain distance and the animal doesn't detect me. Why? Because that animal is upwind. I'm downwind. My scent does not travel upwind. Sight, sound, all of these that come to the aid of the defense of that animal are at play. I have to have superior intellect in order to get close enough to do it. I have to have steady nerves in order to do it. Now, many of you are wondering where this conversation is going because you didn't tune in to learn how to hunt. You didn't turn in to learn how to fly. But the principles at play are the ones that you need. We need to translate what we're talking about. In many cases, I've talked about the difference between education and intelligence. And we sometimes conflate the two, think that one automatically transmits or whatever it does to the other. And that's not necessarily true. Because we can go through an academic exercise. We can reach the level of high school graduate. We can reach the level of an AA. We can reach the level of a BS or a BA. We can reach the level of competency in many different aspects. And oftentimes, they don't translate out. I've had friends, and hopefully things may have changed, but majoring in geology, for example, and only going to the bachelor's level is the equivalent of wanting to be a chemist and only going through high school. It's possible, but most people aren't going to give you the time of day in order to do it. We find that we sometimes lead people down a path and we don't let them know how long that path is going to be. But as I went into management, I found that many times my theoretical prediction of who was going to succeed and who was not were completely upside down. Completely upside down. And this was due to the fact that there were motivating factors on some people that were non-existent on others. As a recruiter, professional recruiter, I was very, very excited about an interview that I had coming up because I was looking at a person that had graduated with high honors in the field of chemical engineering. We were looking for chemical engineering. And unfortunately, because of scheduling conflicts, I had not had the opportunity to look at his resume. But I found a person academically sharp, but not so in practical areas. Not so in practical areas. He would have been a horrible fit for us. But then I come along other people who don't have near the qualifications. They have that spark of genius with them. That spark that allows them to take what they know and adapt it in a meaningful way. To understand what they don't know and find ways of getting that information. Sometimes it's direct. Sometimes it's indirect. Sometimes they can learn a skill, which is essential. But knowing those times when it is necessary to have someone else do it, pay them for it, and get a product that way may be the most effective solution. I've been on both sides of this situation. I have understood it. Sometimes I thought I understood it, but sometimes I don't. As we are looking at a world in which experience counts, being able to know those times when it is essential and those times when it is just desirable. Sometimes we can plod down the road. We can seek a path. And some of the people that I admired, I never, ever met because I was so inspired by people that were able to live in lands that they didn't know much about. I was wondering, and I often wonder, if I could have survived in those times, could I have come into America or any other country and survived the hazards, survived the wildlife? I remember one time, and I'm certainly glad that my father did not go through with this, when he had the opportunity to close the garage door and capture a deer. That would have been a very, very unwise thing to do because they can defend themselves. We find that in the wild, many animals, when cornered, fight ferociously. What does that have to do with success? You can put yourself in a position where you find it necessary to fight for your success, to fight for your very survival. And this is what you need a taste of sometimes. You need that charge. When somebody tells you you can't do it, the sweetest revenge is showing that you can. Yes, I can. Not only can I, but I will. You make believers out of doubters. Oh, yeah, I knew he could do that. I knew it could be done. Sometimes that's just a face-saving measure. Sometimes those people are the ones that gave you the hardest ride. They rode you unmerciful in the beginning. But you are a stronger, stronger person for it. I recall a situation that took place in the mid-90s, 1990, 1995, thereabouts, in which I found myself in a very, very difficult position. I found myself in a position where I had difficulty sleeping. I had difficulty eating. I saw myself wasting away. And why was that happening? Because I had been diagnosed with lung cancer, severe case of lung cancer. I was told that I had 6 to 10 months to live. You sometimes wonder, if this is all I got, what am I going to do? I found myself praying more than usual. I found myself in a position where I was praying, but I was not getting relief. I was not getting that comfort that I thought that I would have. And one day, I said, Lord, what I'm trying to do is control you. And I know we pray for those things that we want to happen. point of saying, I turn control of this over to you. I'm telling you what to do. And I don't really even feel good about it. All I want you to do is to give me the strength to endure the path that you know I'll follow. Give me the strength to do it. It may not be difficult. It may not be easy. But just give me the strength to endure it. I began to look at life completely different from that point. I used to get up, and because I rode my motorcycle every day, that was my main mean of transportation, summer, winter, spring, fall, whatever. I had an electric vest. I had heated gloves. And so when it was cold, I just dressed for the occasion and off I went. The only thing that would get me off was, because I lived fairly near the river, those conditions in which there was fog present, because I know that fog can provide a thin layer of ice, which is not a good thing to be riding on with two wheels. Other than that, I rode. It could be as cold as it wanted to be. It could be as hot as it wanted to be. It could rain. It could do whatever it wanted to. I didn't care. I enjoyed being out there. I enjoyed the hardships. It made the better weather even better. Betterer. I don't know. We make up words sometimes as we go along through life. But as long as we understand what we're doing, why we're doing it, and the thing that I'm doing is motivating and inspiring myself, we understand that. And so when I began to do that and say, just give me the strength to endure, my outlook on life changed. When I'd wake up and I'd see it raining, I'd say, thank you, Lord, for another day. I know that this rain is necessary. I'm not going to curse you for providing that rain. I'm going to thank you for providing that rain. It snows. I enjoy looking at a pristine picture of Earth with this soft velvet snow. On days that I no longer did. I embraced it. We can embrace the challenge. We can embrace the fight. This is what I learned in football. I don't necessarily get the satisfaction out of playing a game and beating someone unmerciful without challenge. But a hard-fought game, you know that you have challenged yourself. You have put yourself up against the best, and you survived. That's what we as entrepreneurs have to do. Now, as I talk about entrepreneurs, sometimes we believe that the only thing that drives people is money, that we have to have that. But I enjoy watching people in the morning on TV, when we are given all of the bad news that's happened. Newscasters are the bad news bearers. They come on and they dump a load of garbage on us first thing in the morning. They dump a load of garbage on us last thing at night. And then we sometimes wonder why we have a garbage-filled life, because we allow that. We invite them into our homes. We invite them into our minds. We invite them everywhere. Sometimes I don't need to hear that, and sometimes neither do you. Sometimes the only reason that we're doing that is so we have something to talk about around the water cooler. The most effective use of your time. I contend that in most cases it is not, unless it has a connection to what you want to do. What you want to do. And most of the time it has no connection. That's not why you're doing it. I first heard of this and I thought it was the most ridiculous thing in the world. I was listening to a man who was an Army officer, retired Army officer. And he said he doesn't listen to the news. Because if things got so bad that they needed him, that they would let him know. And I began to think, that is true. If they need you, they will find you. Now, I almost came across a phishing scheme today. Somebody's telling me that, texted me that they couldn't deliver my package because the address was complete. Oh, man, I got a package? I'm going to jump right in the middle of this. No, if you know enough to find me on a cellular device, then you have enough information to deliver the package if it's mine. If I don't get it, I know what to do in order to get it. And being completely honest and ethical with myself. No scheme, no game, but with truth on my side. I get up and I see people that are maybe have devoted to saving animals in their community. Is that particularly profitable? Not necessarily. And sometimes it costs money. But the satisfaction you get of doing what you want is without limits. It's without limits. This is why we have some young people that are doing things to improve the community, while old people that have the resources are doing nothing. You take your resources and you line them up. You have an army. That army is capable of almost anything that you can ever imagine. God gives you what you need, and he gives you enough of it. The resources that are essential, you have. So when I look at early man walking on the face of the earth, there has to be a resource. There has to be a source of the wisdom that comes in. Now, if God can feed the birds every day, he can certainly feed you. We have plants around us. Can we talk about that? We can eat them. We can use them for medicinal purposes. I think many of the cancers and other diseases that we have today come from our diet, because we're not eating those things that we need to eat. That information, that knowledge had to come from somewhere. And the person that can feed the birds, the squirrels, the rabbits, the deer, the antelope, the moose, the, you name the animal, the turtle, the fish, I think has the wisdom to give to us what we need. And we have to believe that. We have to have faith in ourselves that the person that created us has the power to provide for us, to provide knowledge, to provide the ability to do things. As many of you may know, I have a grandson who is wheelchair bound. But being in a wheelchair does not affect your mind. It does not affect your mind. And even if it did, because I've seen people on the autistic spectrum, and they are not held back by themselves. They're held back by many of the misbeliefs that we have about them. There are jobs that they can do and excel at them. many times there are jobs in the service industry. And these people are so focused on being helpful, so focused on being kind, that they excel at what they're doing. We, on the other hand, think that anything from a splinter to whatever is a death sentence. It's not, but we have enough information available to us that we know how to take control of it. I remember in old days, you had a splinter and somebody sterilized a needle and would get that out. They understood that if it remained, it would fester and put your life in danger. I almost lost my life at an early age because I had a BB in my finger. I was so afraid of what would happen if I let somebody know about it, that it became infected. I had to let them know. And it would have been so much better had I let them know soon after it happened. Sometimes we do things that we have been warned against doing, and we don't know. We're in a quagmire. We don't know what to do. We have to ask for help when help is needed, when it's indicated, whether that is from God, whether that's from our minister, whether it's from a fellow churchgoer, whether it's from anybody, a friend that you may have. We are put here for a reason. People are put into our lives for a reason. Sometimes it's a season, sometimes it's a lifetime. But we have the wisdom to determine which is which. We have wisdom. Where did it come from? I think it was programmed in us by our Creator. So we oftentimes go exploring. I can imagine going into a foreign land. You don't know what you can eat. You don't know what you can't. And yet and still, and I hope that I'm not sending anybody to an early grave here, but there are so many remedies that we have had over the years, but we begin to laugh at them. God said that he would give us everything we needed, everything we needed. We find that many of the medicines are nothing more than mimics of what we find in nature. That the healing of our bodies is already here. We have to recognize it. Somebody realizes that if they can do this and do that, that they can make tons and tons of money. The federal government has come out and said that no food can cure an illness. I don't know them all. I don't know the ones that are harmful. But I don't believe them. We find wisdom in some of the strangest places. We find wisdom from some people that many people overlook completely. Whether we have tea in the morning, and many of these have healing properties, we have to understand them. Are there cases where you might be steered to one and it reacts differently? Possible. Because no one medicine cures everything that we have. None whatsoever. But we learn to sort out information. And this is one of the things that I think comes from God, comes from that road to success. Like I said, when I was given the diagnosis that I had 6 to 10 months to live, I was so much in belief that nobody could tell me anything that would shock me. Nothing. I had nerves of steel. But when that doctor looked me straight in the eyes And they had done a lavage, which is washing out my lung tissue. And two independent people said, yes, this is what you have. This is the prognosis. 6 to 10 months to live. And I said, Lord, I understand that I am on a journey. I understand that it is not going to be the most pleasant journey I've ever had. I just want you to give me the strength, the wisdom to endure it. The strength, the wisdom to endure it. My outlook on life changed. It changed. There are days that I would have cursed every raindrop that fell. I went to recently to a celebration of life, and it was raining and raining hard. We pulled the car up as close as I could to the door. By the time I could get from the door to the door of the building, I was virtually soaked. And that happens. Rain comes into our lives. But if it weren't for the rain, we wouldn't have the crops. If we didn't have the crops, we wouldn't have the life. We adapt to what's there. But I still go back and I admire those people that survived. I look at people in Africa, and we see that there are various civilizations. Some of them were hunter-gatherers. As we began to get into agriculture, planting, we no longer had to travel long distances in order to survive. I look at some of those tribes there, and they occasionally suffer flooding. They occasionally suffer droughts. But they have found a way to maintain their life throughout these cycles. When I look at some of the civilizations that take place, and I'm not trying to compare them to what we have today. Oh, they didn't have television, so they were backward people. Sometimes I think we can be happy instead of having a television, of having a friend. As we journey down this path, we have friends. We have people that come into our lives, I think, sometimes just to deliver a single message. I used to enjoy watching Touched by an Angel, other programs like that. And yeah, they were somewhat of a fantasy, but they gave me hope. And if it gives me hope, it is worthwhile, in my opinion. Yeah, I could watch some cowboys and Indians, and I don't know why we have to put it in those particular categories. But that is what we grow up with. We sometimes grow up with ideas that are realistic. We see somebody riding by on a horse at full gallop and shoot the gun out of somebody's hand. And yet and still, we have the FBI study cases where people are in small rooms and unload guns at each other and nobody is hit. But we are left with that fantasy of what should be real. Let us get off of our high horse. Let us look at life realistically. Now, one thing that I want to talk to you about is partnerships. We can go into partnerships. We sometimes have people that have been friends since forever, elementary school, and we think suddenly we can open a business and it's going to prosper. And maybe it could have, but we sometimes overlook aspects. There are business aspects to this, and we sometimes overlook, oh, I don't need that. I don't need that. And then something happens, and we're at odds with each other, and we spend hours, dollars, because we don't know how to break up, because we have not defined who is who and what is what. Sometimes that is essential. Sometimes we need a professional to do it. Sometimes we can do it ourselves. But one of the things you have to understand is if you write it and you misunderstand what you're doing, that the blame falls on you because you are taking the role of an expert. Doesn't mean that it can't be done. Doesn't mean that it shouldn't be done. But we, at least we have a point to start, a point to work from. And we do this because we find, and some people are embarrassed to fail, embarrassed to fail. We look at Thomas Edison. Thomas Edison worked and worked and worked and worked on the light bulb. And I'm not all convinced that, one, I know that Thomas Edison did not invent the light bulb. Other people had it. What his contribution was to produce a practical model of the light bulb. And even at that, compared to what we have today, it is a miss. Yeah, it produced what it was supposed to do. But I remember days when a light bulb burned out, you couldn't just reach up there and grab it because that thing was hot. What he had done is invented a heat source that also produced light. I'm not going down that road today, but the reason that we can have lower wattage bulbs produce brighter lights is because of what we have learned. That knowledge is controlled by God. And what we're trying to do is to tap into that resource. I've told you this many times. George Washington Carver never took a book into his laboratory. But he got up at 4 o'clock every morning to spend time with his creator. Do you do that? Most of the time we're in such a rush to do everything that we don't take that time. George Washington Carver is noted for the peanut. And although he made over 300 products out of the peanut, most of you can't name one. Yeah, I said one. Because the product that you think he made, peanut butter, he didn't. But he knew so much more about it. Now, he was a soil scientist. But the connection, the power, the reach, the partnership that he had with his creator is what made everything possible. Many of you don't realize that at Tuskegee Institute, when he went there, he had to take a pay cut from his job at Iowa State. But he went there because he could give back to people. Not financial success, but because of his thrift, because of his abilities, he was able to lead a large sum of money to Tuskegee Institute. When you visit the museum or the museum and the laboratory of what he had, you would see a very, very talented man. Who would have ever thought that George Washington Carver homesteaded? He raised crops on 17 acres of land to finance his college education. This humble man, who as a child was spared the hard work in the field because he was sickly, but he was determined. That determination, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls. Now, as we are talking, I hope that there are many younger people listening to the broadcast as well, because you're setting up your life, your future, your hope. The hope of the world is dependent upon you. You may not like school, but I guarantee you, if you do what you need to do before you do what you want to do, all of that will change. It will change because I think God has an order to life. When we look at some of the greatest monuments that are puzzling people to this day, we find that many of them are making order out of chaos. Order out of chaos. When we look at Stonehenge, when we look at many of the other great monuments that we are wondering about, they knew when the solstice was going to be here. They knew when the equinox was taking place. This is making order out of a unorderly year. They knew when to plant. They knew when to harvest. Get on your knees. Make contact with your Creator to lead and guide you in the ways that you want to go. We often hear, and I had a difficult time of this as a child, and the minister would come up and say, well, God told me to do this. I mean, I could sit in a room, a quiet room. I never heard anybody talking to me. I didn't understand at that age. And we go through seasons. When I was a child, I spake as a child. I acted as a child. I understood as a child. Later, those same experiences would be much more meaningful. When we have ministers, part of that job is explaining to people some of these concepts that are mystifying the rest of us, who don't understand. I began later to understand that thoughts would come into my mind. What is talking except thoughts coming into your mind? Sometimes we have to try things that are different. And in this day and time, I think that we're losing the battle, folks. Our preachers are losing the battle because they're not coming up with new and innovative ways of getting people into the church. There are things that we can do there that are essential. I looked at our church. We have a kitchen in that church. That kitchen we are paying for 24/7, 365, but we're not utilizing it. We could be training people in our community how to run a restaurant, how to feed people. And we don't have to give the food away free, but we could make it at a very reasonable cost. We could provide nutritious meals. We have teachers in our congregations that would be tickled pink to know that they could provide assistance to the young kids that are coming up in and outside of our church. We sometimes believe that it has to be inside, but we don't get people inside unless we reach outside to obtain them. We have that genius, that stroke of genius that sometimes goes untapped. Sometimes it goes untapped because we're afraid to reach out. I know for many years, success, as I had defined it in my mind, was missing because I didn't have the courage to reach out, to try different things. I have seen ideas come up in meetings that I had, but was afraid to present because I thought somebody might laugh at it. Somebody might laugh at it. That's not life. Let them laugh. Let them roll down the floor if they wanted to. I remember the first time I went skydiving, and I had opened my mouth to my son. He was going to West Point. He was going to jump school. I say, you might jump, but you won't do it before I will. I remember those words. I said them. I didn't realize how scary they could be. But I did understand many principles. I understood how it worked. But I had to come to a realization. And that realization was that as we were going to do our first jump, I didn't care if people rolled down the aisle laughing because I was afraid. I had to understand and control my fears. Understand this? I want you to understand it. I had to control my fear. Success is not the absence of fear. Success is controlling yourself so we could get up there. And when it came my turn, if I was afraid, I was not going. They could laugh. They could do whatever they wanted to do. We were relatively close to the ground. We were less than a mile up in the air, 4,000 feet. And it came time for me to dangle my feet out so that I could get out of the plane. It was a Cessna, high-wing Cessna. There was a small step that I was to step on and hold on to the wing until the jump master tapped me on the side, at which point I would let go. It was not a tandem jump. I'm out there by myself. But for some reason, when I dangled my feet out the door, it felt peaceful. It felt calm. We had slowed to 95 miles an hour. And I felt at peace. It was a scary situation. Just days before, I had refused to climb a ladder, to put a nail in a piece of siding on the house, because that ladder was a little bit springy to me. Not understanding that needed to happen for it to be an effective ladder. But as I began to trust in what I knew to be right, a certain strength, a certain peace, a certain stillness came to me. There are people today that would probably be terrified at that situation. And I can guarantee you that I was terrified at that situation, because somebody asked me a question and I could not answer. Not because I didn't know what was going on, but I couldn't get enough spit to swallow to clear my mouth to say anything. Yeah, I had fear. But when we have that fear, it is a heightened awareness, but it does not mean that this is not where you intended to be. That fear, and I can imagine there are ministers who stand up before a congregation that feel some degree of trepidation by just standing there, by having the courage to open their mouth to people. Yeah, you're in front of believers, but occasionally you're not. When we get outside of the confines of the church, I think that's where that faith has to come from. And sometimes we don't feel comfortable, not necessarily in that role, because that's a role that sometimes people point at and laugh at. Point at and laugh at. Is your faith so weak that you can't take a little bit of that? Sometimes we have to wonder, and sometimes we embark on these journeys. We look at the task at hand. I think that we have to look at it, and we have to be adaptable. Yeah, things happen in our lives. I remember when my parents passed. They passed within 60 days of each other. Very deep canyon to cross. Was I afraid? Was I shaken at times? Yes. But I knew deep down that their prayers for me were to be able to face my fears, to be able to bridge that gap, be able to make sense out of nonsense, to be able to make order out of disorder. That's what they had trained me to do. I made many decisions in my life, some of them right, some of them wrong. While I was embarrassed at being wrong, I found that that's where my strength came from. That's where my strength came from, because I learned. I learned what to do. I learned how to do it. If I had followed through on the ideas that I had, I would probably be great by now. But I let that fear, I let that tremble in my knees, I let that sweat, I let whatever the emotion was control the situation rather than me controlling it. Are you going to find yourself in difficult situations? Yes, you will. But we're better than that. God did not create us as a joke. God did not create us as a second-class anything. We have to believe in ourselves. We have to believe in Him. We have to believe in the entire system. Sometimes we are living in systems that are doing exactly what they are designed to do, exactly what they're designed to do. Now, Sunday, the 27th, I'm going to talk about one of the greatest fighting forces that ever existed during World War II. I'm going to talk about Patton's Black Panthers, the 61st Tank Battalion. Do you know about it? Most of us don't. And there is a reason that we don't know about it, because there are people that think that any discussion of race is completely taboo. We don't talk about that in this country. Yet Patton's Black Panthers, the all-black tank unit, essentially won the Battle of the Bulge, which won the World War II. Why don't we know about it? Because there are people that understand. And when we went to war, many of the people that were most upset about us displaying courage, displaying the abilities of leadership, of displaying the rules of and ideals of this country, were the white soldiers, because they understood that we would come back from war and want the full spoils of citizenship that we had demonstrated. And when you look at the 761st. And I am so happy to talk about this part of it, because two people that most of us admire, Morgan Freeman and Denzel Washington, are working on a documentary of that. To talk about what you have done, to talk about what anybody else has done, does not take away the glory, the thunder of someone else. But it just shows that God is with you. God has given you the courage. God has given us everything we need except our belief in ourselves. Can you think of any reason why God would create us as a joke? I certainly can't, and I have tried. I've spent decades doing that. And the more I find out, the more that I begin to understand that we were put here. Yeah, we're going to have trials. We're going to have tribulations. But the more we understand who we are, what we are, whose we are, and what we're capable of doing, we are wasting effort. We're wasting time. We're treating it as if we were placed here to be second-class citizens. That's not true. Join me Sunday at 4 p.m. on the same links that you used to get here, as we talk about people that we should all be proud of, not just black people, white people, Asian people, Hispanic people, you name it. It shows the character that comes from God himself. It shows what comes from a belief in ourselves, in our ability, in our God to lead us on. Ladies and gentlemen, the program that you're listening to is Faith on the Road to Success. We come to you every Thursday at 7 p.m., and that is 4 p.m. Pacific time. I am your host, John C. Abercrombie. We come to you every Sunday, and if you want to understand the story that we're going to be talking about, go to AmazingBlackHistory.com. We post every Thursday, and it gives you an idea of the program that we are going to be talking about. We are miracles. Now, we've only got a little over 2 minutes to go. Normally, at this point, I would open the microphones and get comments, but we're not going to do that because I want to make sure. We had somewhat of a rocky start this morning because Apostle Armstrong was having difficulty in setting the show up and the one ahead of us and this one, but I want to get us back on track and allow Deacon Armstrong, who's going to have a very powerful program come on, to be able to set up and come on at 8 p.m. We have many programs on Crown Talking Drums. Maybe you even have an idea for one. Contact us. Let us know. I'll see you again here on Thursday. I hope to see you on Sunday on Did You Know? Because so much of what makes us is information that has been withheld from us, not only from black people, but from white people, from all. And with 90 seconds left in the podcast, I'm going to close, and I encourage you to come back, same information, and listen to Deacon Armstrong as he delivers his message. This is Faith on the Road to Success. I'm your host, John C. Abercrombie. And to all, be blessed, my friends. Be blessed. Have a great week, and I'll see you on Sunday. Thanks for listening.